It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Brett, good evening. There was no hiding the frustration of Baltimore State Attorney Marilyn Mosby this morning when she announced that her office was dropping all remaining charges against three officers in the death of Freddie Gray. You have to remember, her office has been working on this case for more than a year now, and six officers were charged in total. After four trials, prosecutors have failed to score even a single conviction. Critics have said all along that Mosby was too aggressive in her the charges that she brought against the officers. And even Judge Barry Williams, who oversaw three of the trials, repeatedly told prosecutors they had failed to present much, if any, evidence showing the officers willfully and intentionally disregarded their training when they placed Freddie Gray in the back of a police van without a seatbelt. Despite that, and despite dropping all remaining charges today, this morning, Mosby said both she and her team still stand by their work and blamed individuals in the Baltimore Police Department for thwarting the investigation at every turn.
We do not believe that Freddie Gray killed himself. We stand by the medical examiner's determination that Freddie Gray's death was a homicide.
The comments made today about our officers by Ms. Mosby were outrageous and uncalled for and simply not true. The state's attorney could not accept the evidence that was presented. She had her own agenda.
All right, Sandy Rios with you, and I actually think that's the biggest news of yesterday. Sandy Rios, in the morning, very happy to be with you this morning, and there's so much news, so here I go. That was a report from Garrett Tenney just this morning, and that is what happened yesterday. All the charges dropped against these officers, at least criminal charges, and the state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, very upset about this. Remember, okay, let me just say this. The good news in this, to me, there are a couple of things. Marilyn Mosby is obviously trying to cause trouble. And Baltimore was really, really suffered under her charges that she brought against these officers so quickly, even without really obviously good evidence, or the judge wouldn't have dropped the charges. But the point that needs to be made is that I think I'm going to play for a second, in just a second, Stephanie Rollins, the mayor of Baltimore, sort of giving the counter view of this, sort of criticizing her co-worker in Baltimore for making the public statements that she did. And the point is this. This isn't a black and white issue. This is an issue of right and wrong. This is an issue of good judgment. And this is an issue where I think the right thing has been done. You know, remember that three of the officers who were charged were white and three were black. And the victim, the judge, the top prosecutor, the mayor are all black. And the police chief at the time that Freddie Gray died as a result of his injuries in the van was black as well. So I just think it needs to be said that there are many people in this country of all colors who really want to see justice done. I don't think Marilyn Mosby is one of them. In fact, it turns out, you know, her husband was running for public office. He was running for mayor at the time. And so she's supposed to be like objective. She's supposed to be looking for the good of the community, for, you know, trying to bring justice after a criminal action. And the judge drops the charges. And I want you to hear more fully what she had to say. This is Marilyn Mosby, the state's attorney, after the decision of the judge yesterday.
And although we came close to convicting one of the officers when his case was tried before 12 Baltimore City residents, the judge, who is within his right, has made it clear that he doesn't agree with the state's theory of the case and does not believe that any of the actions or inactions of these officers rise to the level of criminality. The judge has acquitted three of these officers, one of the arresting officers, the wagon driver, the highest ranking police officer in these matters. In light of these consistent outcomes, the likelihood of the remaining defendant's decision to elect a bench trial with this very same judge is highly probable, and unfortunately, so is the outcome. We do not believe that Freddie Gray killed himself. We stand by the medical examiner's determination that Freddie Gray's death was a homicide. However, after much thought and prayer, it has become clear to me that without being able to work with an independent investigatory agency from the very start, without having a say in the election of whether our cases proceed in front of a judge or a jury, without communal oversight of policing in this community, without real substantive reforms to the current criminal justice system, we could try this case 100 times and cases just like it, and we would still end up with the same result.
All right, I'm going to interrupt her because it's long enough, but you get the point. I mean, she's angry, she's partisan, she doesn't have the evidence, but she, you know, she's mad. So she's saying the system is rigged. And many people thought that last night there would be violence. Black Lives Matter would be stoked into some sort of action. But as far as I know this morning, nothing happened. And that could very well be because another African-American woman leader from Baltimore, the mayor, Stephanie Rollins-Blake, spoke to Shepard Smith, interestingly enough, on the floor of the DNC yesterday. And this was her response to Marilyn Mosby's response. Let's listen.
She's very, you know, she's an independently elected official in the state with a very big responsibility, and that is to have even-handed justice and to make sure that the people of our city respect the judicial process. I think when you say things to give people pause, that they're not getting a just outcome, and it's clearly untrue.
What's just disturbed here?
Anyone, whether you're a police officer or anyone off the street, has the right as an American to be not guilty, to be to.
Was justice served, though?
Justice is a process, and the process was fair, and it was even. And, you know, she mentioned that she doesn't have the choice to say whether the case goes before a judge or the jury. If I get picked up for having illegal drugs, I don't get to, the prosecutor does
right.
not have the choice.
But Mayor, in this case, a man died in the back of a police van. The accusation was, and the prosecutor still insists, this was a homicide, that when the officers didn't buckle
when you
him
make
in,
that, when you say that,
yes,
there's evidence that you have to provide in order for that to be the case. The judge has said on multiple occasions that that is not the case. There's a difference between responsible and guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and that's why you go to court.
Was the prosecution not handled well?
I'm not making that judgment call. The judge made the determination based on the information that was provided to him. He made a decision that was fair. He's one of the most highly regarded judges on the circuit court in Maryland. I have the utmost respect for him. If you actually read his report, you will see why he made his decision.
Are it was because the prosecutor's words helpful or no?
They're absolutely not helpful when you're giving when you insinuate that the process is rigged, and that is, I think, an unfair statement about the judge and about the investigation, especially when she purported to do her own independent investigation in her initial press conference.
All right, that's Stephanie Rollins-Blake, the mayor of Baltimore, and again, I guess just the point, the most important point I'd like to make on this is, look. All of us are Americans, those of us that are actually Americans here. And regardless of color, we are brothers and sisters in this country, in our citizenship. And we want to see justice done to all colors and all races, and by all colors and all races. And I just applaud. I'm grateful. This is how it's supposed to work. And the people like Marilyn Mosby, who are partisan and who want to find trouble, who want to make trouble, should not be in office, whether they're white or they're black. And there are plenty of both. And so that's what happened last night. And I think that's the big news of the day. One little story that was kind of a local Virginia story that I didn't tell you yesterday. On the other side of this, and these are not huge things, but they're important to know the way police are being treated. There's a Noodles & Company in Alexandria, Virginia, just 2 days ago. A female officer was standing in line. And the cook came out and said, told the cashier they would not cook for this police officer. It was a female. So the cashier was a little confused, and they talked together, and then they started laughing at the officer. So the officer leaves, and someone reports this, goes up to Noodles & Company. Noodles & Company issues a very stern and very strong statement that they expect the highest ethical and personal behavior from their team members. Those two employees, they are claiming, have been fired. Nevertheless, you know, it made me think, you know, I think police, you know, are even in danger of, is someone going to harm them, put something in their food? I mean, so another restaurant in Alexandria, in response to it, put up a note on their door. We support our police officers. I guess it's the Atlantis. I should give them credit. Atlantis Pizzeria and Family Restaurant. And this, again, is a local story. In the Bradley Shopping Center in Alexandria said, we support our police officers, firefighters, and deputy sheriffs in honor of those who protect us every day. And by the way, so they're offering a free meal this week to all police officers, firefighters, and deputies from Alexandria, which is very cool. And I think, you know, I mentioned that maybe those of you in business or who know businesses, maybe this is the way to go. Police are welcome here. We want you. We want your business. We'll take care of you and then take care of them, you know. Then another story that kind of related to this, and this is show you my ignorance of what's happening in the music world. Me, who used to know everything pretty much that was going on in the music world, know nothing now. But there's a duo, a country western duo called the Florida Georgia Line. See, you probably know that, but I didn't. But they were performing at a music festival in Kenosha, Wisconsin this past weekend. And they sent word that they didn't want, let's see, find the exact words here. They don't want any law enforcement behind, before, during, or after the show. So two sheriffs, Kenosha County Sheriff David Beth and Jones County Sheriff Greg Graver, both confirmed that they'd gotten that word. No, they don't want any police behind, before, during the concert. No. However, when the concert was over, they requested an escort, a police escort. And guess what? The sheriff said, no, we're not doing it. No, sorry, we're busy. We're kind of over committed, and it's not something they have to do. It's a courtesy, sort of. So they did not give them extra protection. But these are the things that are playing out in the country as a result of the whole move against police. And this is not, again, the first time this has happened. In the 60s, Bernadine Dorn, who was a law professor at Northwestern, Bill Ayers, who is a retired professor, but very much in the thick of things, trust me, University of Illinois Chicago campus, and one of the founders of the Weather Underground were in the thick of calling police pigs, calling for violence, the violent overthrow of the United States. And I was just sharing with a friend yesterday who didn't remember this, but I do, on 9/11 2001, there was a picture of Bill Ayers on the cover of the New York Times Magazine. It just happened to come up that day, standing very proudly on top of an American flag, saying he didn't have any regrets about what he had done. So this whole notion of hating police and going after them and violently overthrowing, it's not new. And the two of the main chief culprits in this are still very actively involved. They're very close to the president. I don't care what they say. I'm telling you, they're very close to the president. And so they are behind the scenes. And speaking of the president, he spoke last night at the convention. I think we have a little potpourri of that, but I guess I'll have to wait and play it for you in a second. The president spoke about, and he was beaming. I watched him beam as he was speaking, but he was talking about Hillary, but he talked about, let's see, himself 119 times. The president of the United States mentioned himself, his honor, as he was talking about Hillary Clinton. I'll play it for you when we come back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your healthcare with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Jan Harper, wife of Pastor Bert Harper.
Sometimes it feels like I'm living in a fishbowl. You know what I mean? When your husband is a church leader, your family is constantly being watched. That's why we offer the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat. And our guest speaker this year is American Family Radio's J.J. Jasper.
I'm very excited to be a speaker, and I'll be sharing comedy at this year's Fishbowl Retreat. I'm especially excited that my wife, Melanie, will minister to the pastor's wives. When speaking at women's events, she shares, if Satan can discourage you, he can defeat you.
If you could use 3 days and 2 nights of relaxation among people who understand your challenges, then join us for the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat.
This year's retreat is scheduled for October 4th through 6th at the Linden Valley Conference Center in Tennessee. Get details at repairingthefoundations.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 300.
And we'll see you there.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. I only vote for pro-life candidates. I figure if a person can't get that issue right, how can they possibly get anything else right? And that brings me to a piece of audio I received from The View. Hillary Clinton was asked whether a baby just hours from birth has constitutional rights. Her response is chilling.
You said, quote, the unborn person doesn't have constitutional rights. And my question is, at what point does someone have constitutional rights? And are you saying that a child on its due date, just hours before delivery, still has no constitutional rights?
Under our law, that is the case, Paula. I support Roe v. Wade.
So Hillary Clinton does not believe a baby just hours from birth has constitutional rights. What kind of a person thinks like that? And what kind of a person votes for someone like that? I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
A lot's happened over the years. Through diplomacy, we shut down Iran's nuclear weapons program. We brought more of our troops home to their families. And we delivered justice to Osama bin Laden. She was doing everything I was doing, but just like Ginger Rogers, it was backwards in heels. We're not done perfecting our union. And there is only one candidate in this race who believes in that future, the next president of the United States, Hillary Clinton.
That was a montage of President Obama speaking last night, and he was at his best. I mean, he was beaming. I mean, his charm is amazing. He is a lot like Bill Clinton used to be. Bill Clinton had such charm, and he would smile, and I had some conservative friends who met him. They were at some function where he was speaking, and he was engaging with the crowd, and as conservative as they were, they said, boy, when he shook your hand and looked into your eyes, it was just magic. I think, the president of the current president has kind of that same quality. And it's kind of hard to remember that really, even while he's speaking about Hillary Clinton, he was talking about himself 119 times. 119 times he talked about himself. And that reminded me that the Judicial Watch did a study of, they've been tracking the cost for President Obama's travel since he started in the White House. And honestly, I don't know if this includes Mrs. Obama's travel, because we all know that that's been pretty amazing too. But just on the Paris Climate Change Conference, taxpayers paid, are you ready for this? To send our president to the Paris Climate Change Conference, we paid $2,976,296,000. That's unbelievable. It's because of the airplane. They took two Air Force Ones, two of the official planes, not just one. And all of the people they paid for luxury hotels in the Intercontinental, the Hilton Astor, the Marriott Ambassador, and on it goes. So the bill was enormous. And, of course, it happens every time he travels. And they say that the total of his travel right now, since he's been in the White House, is $82,606,703,000. That's pretty amazing. That is amazing. But that, you know, he's a great guy, right? When he looks and he smiles and he's got that gleam in his eye, he's just fabulous, right? That reminded me of another story. Mark Zuckerberg, who's a good friend to the president. Well, perhaps you remember that the IRS singled out people like you and me, Franklin Graham's organization, people that were Tea Party patriot, all kinds of people, and subpoenaed their records, asked for transcripts of speeches, of prayers, refused to give 501c3 status, at least withheld it for years, harassed people like Catherine Ingebrecht and others over and over again. And let me ask you, before I tell you the story, have you ever been audited by the IRS? Did you ever, like, ignore what they ask you to do? Did you ever say, I'm just not showing up. I'm not giving you that. I'm just not coming. Did you ever do that? I'm just wondering. Do you know anybody who did do that? Well, this really good buddy of the president is in fact doing that right now, as several buddies do. But speaking of Al Sharpton, but that's not who I'm talking about. Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook. He's been summoned 7 times. To appear before the IRS, at least somebody from his organization. And they've been asking, for their records. And their tax liability beginning from December 31st, 2010. But, they just can't. I'm sure they're busy. I'm sure they're just too busy. And that's a pretty big ask, right, to go before the IRS. It is a lot of trouble. Ask anybody that's been through it. I have a personal friend that went through it about 3 years ago. And she was so traumatized. Honestly, she lost weight. It was terrible for her. It lasted for months. But hey, Mark Zuckerberg knows somebody, so not so much. 7 summonses. But the president was just impressive last night, wasn't he? Just so warm and engaging, and it's justice for all, under him. So not to worry. Nancy Pelosi sort of echoed President Obama's remarks, remember, in 2008. When President Obama was campaigning, he said, people like, maybe you and maybe me were clinging to God and guns and religion. Remember that? Well, Nancy Pelosi was interviewed yesterday, or in the last 24 hours, and she, this is what she had to say.
So many times white, non-college educated white males have voted Republican. They voted against their own economic interest because of guns, because of gays, and because of God, the 3 G's, God being the woman's right to choose. That is softening. Some of those people were never going to be voting Democratic anyway.
Of course, if you couldn't possibly believe in God if you were college educated, right? Well, I guess you probably couldn't survive the American university system if you believed in God. That point might be made. But I wonder if Nancy Pelosi knows that every single Ivy League school in America, from Harvard to Yale to Princeton, were all founded on Christian principles. Just visit their campuses if you can still blow the dust off and read, the placards. They were founded by men who were training to be pastors, ministers, but they must have been pretty stupid then, maybe the IQ wasn't the same as it is now, because now we have reached such an elevated level of understanding that, you know, it's only the uneducated white people who believe in God. Oh, come on, you know? That's offensive, and of course it should be offensive to everyone, again, regardless of color, but that is the disdain with which leadership, certainly in the Democratic Party and some in the Republican, but mostly the Democratic Party right now, hold God in complete disdain. That's why they tried to remove him from their platform 4 years ago. Remember that? Anybody remember that? That's why I was stunned when they opened the Democrats opened their convention a couple of days ago singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. It was unbelievable to me, and I'm going to say, now I'll get email for this, but that's okay, I'm going to say it, because I am the biggest fan of gospel music you could imagine, and not just gospel. I loved Motown. I can name every artist. You just call me, ask me. I used to love sing it. I love black artists. I love black music, but that was the worst rendition of the Battle Hymn of the Republic I've ever heard, and I think maybe because maybe they were sort of removed from the real story of that hymn. Because that hymn was written by Harriet Beecher Stowe when she went to visit with President Lincoln a night before a famous battle. I don't remember what the battle was, but she actually saw the soldiers reading their Bibles by the light. And she wrote, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. They are tramping out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible, swift sword. His truth is marching on." Well, listen, I'm glad they sang it, but I just couldn't help but remember that 4 years ago they were taking God out of their pledge. So not sure what they're doing, you know, singing about him at their convention. It's an odd thing. It's a very odd thing. And Todd Starnes pointed out that they started booing during the opening prayer. So there is an irreverence for God. Not that every person, every Democrat, but certainly the mother that talked about her child being killed, you know, talked about how great God is. And I was grateful for that, even though I disagree with her conclusion. So I know there are people there who honor God, but that convention is really, for the most part, godless. And it's hard to watch because of that. And one of the fruits of that is this terrible, terrible policy on the lack of, you know, they talk about lives mattering, any lives mattering. And yet when it comes to unborn babies, the most innocent of us all. And could I also emphasize that God, again, before the commandments were ever given, centuries before the Ten Commandments were ever delivered, when the account of Genesis was given, God said that innocent blood should not be shed. He takes that very seriously. We are not to take life by our own hand. Now, he's not talking about war. He's not talking about capital punishment. He's talking about you and me taking the life of certainly, especially innocent. And so Shannon Bream has this report on this whole business of the closeness, the tied at the hipness of Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider, and the Democratic Party. Let's listen.
Fox News has confirmed that vice presidential nominee Senator Tim Kaine, who describes himself as personally pro-life, made a private deal to back Secretary Clinton's plans to repeal the Hyde Amendment, the measure that blocks federal tax dollars from being used to fund abortions. It's a shift for the man who's got a nearly perfect pro-choice voting record, despite his support of a ban on partial birth abortion and for parental notification laws. And it's a win for pro-choice advocates who are taking center stage at the DNC this week, pledging to do everything in their power to make sure Clinton becomes the next president.
Hillary has always been in Planned Parenthood's corner because she knows women deserve someone who is in theirs. She will always stand up for the right of every woman to access a full range of reproductive health care, including abortion, no matter her economic status.
Hillary Clinton not only supports expanded access to abortion, she's also made clear she believes personal convictions of average Americans shouldn't stand in her way.
Laws have to be backed up with resources and political will, and deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed.
A brand new poll by Marist shows Clinton is out of step with the majority of Americans on this controversial topic. 78% say they support substantial
restrictions. You know what? I'm going to interrupt Shannon because the point, I don't want you to forget what she just played. Did you hear Mrs. Clinton say that religious beliefs about the sanctity of human life have to be changed? religious beliefs on the sanctity of human life have to be changed. Ladies and gentlemen, please let that soak into your mind and your heart about what that means about someone who believes that. And she does believe it. She has been a champion of every form of abortion since I've been following her for the last however many years that's been. Long, long time. She thinks abortion is the best thing since sliced bread. It really is almost the holy grail for the Democratic Party. It is shocking to me. And it's certainly the holy grail of women her age who pushed for this, the legalization of it through Roe versus Wade, who it's like the banner that they hold up. I remember walking in a pro-life protest at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, whatever year that was, and I was holding a very innocent sign. It was just life is precious or something like that. And a woman from the street saw my sign, ran over to me, and was absolutely out of her mind, angry with me, just beside herself that I was holding a sign that said something like, life is precious. And I thought to myself, you know what? What is it? Why would she be so angry at that sentiment? Why? And I think, you know, it's because so many women of that generation, and that's my generation, actually, you know, were encouraged, had abortions. And I really do believe that their anger at the pro-lifers is because if they should admit at any point deep down in their conscience that what they did was horrendous, they can't bear it. And so they believe that as long as they can keep this legal, that somehow that law is the law of God is different than the law of man, but they make that distinction. Whatever is legal is moral. That's what they think. That's what they hope. That's what they pray. That it's still moral. It's still okay because it's still the law. But those of us that say, no, the law does not reflect God's heart, does not reflect the truth on this, they get so angry because they cannot bring themselves to confessing the sin that they committed. And it's a very dark, heinous sin. I mean, there's a lot of sins in our lives. Most of us, we've confessed them, many of us. If you don't confess, you get hard and you get angry. And that's what I think is driving so much of this. And so you've got Hillary Clinton, you know, the champion. I don't know what her background is on that. I have no idea. How would I know? You know, the stories about her sexual behavior when she was young are very interesting and varied and concerning. Obviously, she was influenced by some very radical people. And I remember certainly the Ayers, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, with the Weather Underground. Now, Hillary was not officially connected with them, but their thing was smash monogamy. And that meant, and I'm not linking this to Hillary Clinton, this particular act. I'm just telling you, this is the kind of people, though, that she was involved with. Smash monogamy, which meant no sex between just two people, always group. And so it's just, it is bizarre, and it is sick. And this is the kind of thing we're seeing pushed in the public eye. I have to say one other thing. This is a tangent. I'm sorry. I do love to watch movies. I find it very refreshing. I watch a lot of old movies because I have to watch so much news, and you know, I got to keep my sanity somehow. And I mostly go back to, you know, old movies on Turner Movie Classics. But I tried last night to watch a movie on Amazon. It was about an orchestra, and because I used to be a musician, like clarinet and piano and conducted, I really, you know, I thought, wow, this is going to be really good. And it was such a great premise. And the music parts of it, I just loved, but it was so filthy. I mean, it was like all kinds of perversions, you know, woven into this, what would have been a great storyline. What is the matter with us that we have degraded ourselves so that we can't even tell a story without adding these kind of degrading things? This is the problem with our culture, and this is why I'm not sure God will spare us. I'm really not. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
For the Congress to continue to give them money, Congress would be complicit in this criminal activity, and it's time to stop it. I think it's a very clear illustration of what our culture demands right now, and that is the leadership of the church rolling up its sleeves, getting into our communities.
Advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Washington Watch Daily with Tony Perkins, weekdays at 4 p.m. Central on AFR Talk.
Every good thing comes from the Father above. And aren't you thankful for coffee? With every purchase of American Family Coffee, a portion of the price goes to support the ministry activities of the American Family Association. Whether it's morning blend, evening roast, or any of the other varieties, every cup of American Family Coffee is delicious and supportive of the cause of Christ. American Family Coffee, now available at afastore.net.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Lost in the continuing controversy over Hillary Clinton's emails, and now whether the Russians already have the 30,000 ones she destroyed, and if so, whether they ought to release them, was this real cyber crisis. The Obama administration has confirmed that cyber attacks on our electric grid could have catastrophic effects. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal reported that President Obama has ordered up a 5-level system for assessing the damage done by hackers and guiding appropriate responses. Quote, a level 5 event is one that poses an imminent threat to the provision of wide-scale critical infrastructure services, national government stability, or the lives of U.S. persons, such as an extensive failure of the power grid, unquote. This is the ultimate transpartisan issue. We must protect every American by protecting the electric grid, not just tell them how bad the attack was after the fact. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
At some point, there's going to be a terrorist diaspora out of Syria like we've never seen before.
That from FBI Director James Comey, speaking today at an international conference on cybersecurity, warning Americans that the ISIS threat from Syria is soon to scatter. The terror group, using the messaging app Telegram, now threatening to strike other Western cities, including right here in the United States, recently posting this image of the Statue of Liberty in New York, along with the words, Washington soon.
We in the American counterterrorism business are constantly focused on that. That's not here yet. That challenge is going to come.
Comey's message comes just a day after two ISIS killers stormed an early morning church service near Normandy, France, murdering a Catholic priest before being killed by police.
We need to change our foreign policy to focus on defeating and destroying ISIS, a word you didn't hear last night at the Democrat convention. You didn't hear it.
The repeated terror attacks in Europe have in turn raised the issue's profile on the U.S. presidential campaign trail. And Trump's criticism that the war on terror has received scant attention by Democrats this week at their national convention is actually backed up by the numbers. For instance, according to the fact-checking website PolitiFact, there were 61 DNC speakers on Monday, tens of thousands of words, and not a single mention of ISIS. Not one.
She launched a team to fight back against terrorists online and built a new global counterterrorism effort.
Tuesday, former President Bill Clinton said his wife, the Democratic nominee, would be ready to lead the fight against terrorism when elected, an argument President Obama is expected to echo in his speech at the convention tonight.
Meanwhile, Brett, the Pope is weighing in on this. He says that the recent wave of jihadist attacks across Europe are proof that the world is, in fact, at war. But it's not a war of religion. Instead, he says, it's a conflict of interest, money, and resources.
Did you catch that? This is Sandy Rios back. The Pope says it's not a war. It's the world's at war, but it's not one of religion. It's all about economics. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You know, this is the Pope, of course, that had Muslim imams in at the Vatican to, you know, dialogue, not understanding that that they were at the same time marking their territory. And then, of course, these two, now we know, members of, I'm laughing. I told you I always laugh when it's not appropriate, so forgive my laughter. But I can't help, you know, the European papers and even some of our news reports here. I heard NPR's reported this. They just can't figure out why. Why did these two guys go into that French church and basically slit the throat and try to behead the priest? Why did they do that? What would cause them? I mean, it must be, according to the Pope, it's economic, right? Because it has nothing to do with religion. Even though now we know that they posted a video, which is available now, in case you want to watch it, committing themselves to ISIS. They're holding hands in the video, you know, about their commitment. And, of course, then they go and they murder this 84-year-old priest while he's doing, while he's preaching, while he's bringing the, I don't know if he's serving communion, but he's at the platform doing whatever he's doing. And they put two nuns at the doorway and held them as hostages to keep people out while they were doing whatever it is they were doing. They stood where the priest had been after they killed him. And started sort of preaching to the congregants. There was only like five of them. But we're not sure what their motive was. What could possibly? It must have been that they couldn't get jobs, according to the Pope. I mean, because the Pope said, and he's always right, it had nothing to do with religion. This is a time of madness. It really is a time of madness. And you heard in that clip, Kevin Cork, he played a clip of FBI Director James Comey, and I've been reading this too, that now there are threats, specific threats, I don't mean places and times, for other cities. And London and Washington, D.C. are two of those cities. And you heard the FBI director say it's coming, and I believe it's coming too. This city that I'm in is filled with Muslim Brotherhood, and I know jihadis. I told you that even, I think it's been 2 years now, 10,000 Palestinian sympathizers, they weren't all from Palestine, but gathered in the park right across from the White House, shaking their fists. And police had to remove pro-Israel supporters because of the danger. This is in D.C., and this is I'm sure, you know, more have come because we're such a welcoming country. And I'm sure they're all friendly and came over here because they wanted to be loyal American citizens. You know, I was in a cab just a couple of days ago coming back from Chicago where I was at another event. And as soon as I got into it was just an interesting exchange. I don't know if I can make this clear. It won't be a story tied up in a bow, but it's just an interesting experience. And this is happening more and more to me, actually, and I'm sure others. I'm getting a little wary even of cab drivers, we have to be careful. One time I got in an argument with a cabbie in Chicago, and he was bringing me from O'Hare to my radio station, and he was trying to talk to me, proselytize me with Islam, and I was telling him about Jesus, and he got so angry. And I thought, well, maybe that was, you know, maybe it wasn't such a good idea to start having this conversation while I'm in his cab and I've got quite a ways to go here. But yesterday, or 2 days ago, when I was coming back from the airport, this cab driver just was very interesting. He was very flustered. He said he'd been, told me he'd been crying. He had episodes of crying. He said the heat was getting to him. And he told me he had a little grandson who isn't able to speak. He's 2 years old. And then I asked him where he was from, and he's Palestinian. He's from Pakistan. And then he starts, just flips into this Muslim proselytizing thing, where he's telling me about, they have these phrases that they slip into all, you know, praise his name, praise be to God, you know, just constantly. And I thought to myself, this is what went through my mind. I thought, I just wonder if his crying had anything to do with something he knows about what may be happening here soon. You know, a lot of Muslims, my understanding and my impression is that not all these guys who are persuaded to kill really want to do that, but they feel like they must. And I just don't even think we can begin to imagine. It's hard to sympathize with that kind of a dilemma. And yet, there's so much pressure brought to them to do something that maybe is not really in their nature or they would never normally do. And yet they're told they must do that in order to prove their love for Allah. I remember I have interviewed not one, not two, probably three different converts to Christianity who were Muslim, who the same theme, that when they found out they didn't have to get revenge, didn't have to do violence, and that they realized that the one true God is a God of forgiveness and grace and mercy. This was the thing that just, it was overwhelmed them. So anyway, I digress quite a bit. But the point is that I think there are threats, and I just think something's bubbling here in D.C., and we may see it. And I was caught a little short yesterday reading to you a quote, and I want to go back and repeat it, because this is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who I honestly don't know that much about. But London, of course, is one of those cities that's under threat too, as it has been, but I guess there are more impending threats. And after the priest was nearly beheaded in that French church, that little French church, he wrote this on Twitter. He said, "Evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. Pray for France, for victims, and for their communities." And I just love that. Evil is defeated. It does go for the weakest. It does deny truth, and it is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so I heard the most wonderful message on Sunday, talking about a lot of things, but one point that our pastor made, John, he's not the senior pastor, but he's so profound. You know, he talked about the verse in James where he says, "You ask, but you ask wrongly. You ask according to your own lusts and your own wants." And John was talking about the things that we want are often good. Nothing wrong with the things that we want, but we want them for the wrong reasons. And I would extrapolate that to say this: we want to be safe. Of course we do. And maybe these are not wrong reasons. It's not wrong to want to be safe. But the thing that we risk the most is losing our lives, at least in this issue, when it comes to ISIS. And is that not a small thing compared to the eternity set before us in the presence of God? If we really believe that, you know, death is not, it's not something we long, it's not something we want in a violent way. But it's not as big a deal as we make it sometimes. We want to live maybe for the wrong reasons. Do we want to live, you know, to glorify God, to serve Him, or do we want to live for our own comfort? I don't know. It's just thoughts I've been having. And so I just would encourage not fear. I mean, we don't need to fear death. I've been praying about that too. You know, if you find yourself in a situation where you're being harmed or someone's doing violence to you, I think of the martyrs of old who were able to, if you've ever read Fox's Book of Martyrs, if you haven't read it, get a copy and read it. And it shouldn't, it's pretty brutal, but you know, the thing of it is, they have the power of God that just comes on them, like Stephen when he was being stoned. And it so exceeds our earthly understanding. It's like a glimpse of glory. And I just want to kind of paint that vision. Not that I'm looking for martyrdom, like the, you know, I just think, I want to be able to die that way. Don't you? And so let's not be afraid. You know, the people of France after this this little village anyway, after these murderers murdered their priest and did great harm, I think, to a couple of their nuns. I don't know the details of that yet. They were out in the village and they said to, as they were walking, you know, we are not afraid. We are not afraid. And that's what I, you know, it's like, we are not afraid. Are we? We are not afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God. Confess your sins and seek God while he may be found, he says. Call upon him while he can hear you. Let's seek him. And he fills you with such a peace and a joy and a spirit that really supersedes all of these trials that we have here in life, in spite of, you know, I talk about them every day. But I know who God is. Otherwise, I couldn't do this job if I didn't trust him. And so even in the most extreme case of trusting him, don't we want to be able to die well? I do. Whether it's on my deathbed or whether I get a really bad report, you know, from the doctor or whatever, I want to be able to just boldly, you know, come into his presence in those final hours. And so don't be afraid. And we'll be like the people of that little French village. We are not afraid. We are not afraid. All right. So I had one other thing I wanted to play for you. And I want to get to this. Paul Nellon is challenging Paul Ryan in Wisconsin. It's a very interesting race. And yesterday he came out with this commercial. Let's listen.
Paul Ryan's home behind me has a fence. He has security. He has everything to make sure that his three children are safe. I deserve the same thing. I deserved the same thing. And so do all of you. This should not happen. Before my son was born, I wrote in his baby book, and I said this to him throughout his life, and on his birthday, I would change it by adding in his year. I would tell him, did I ever tell you that out of all the children in the world, you're the one I would have picked, and I deserved to have him at the end of my life sitting next to me. And Paul Ryan and other politicians that don't think a border is worth it, this is the loss. And I hope that they don't have the same experience I have, because I hope that they will change their minds and start securing the border. So I'm just asking, as you look to vote this year, that you look at Paul Nealon. He is going to enforce our borders.
That's
Paul Nealon, who's challenging Paul Ryan. And that's a very big deal, of course. Speaker Paul Ryan, of course, is an open borders advocate. So that's where Paul Nealon is hitting him. And by the way, the White House yesterday announced a surge of Central American refugees, and now they're going to allow them to bring in their parents, their adult siblings, aunts, uncles, grandparents. It's just an amazing situation. And Tim Kaine, yesterday in an interview, talked about how he thought that's something they could accomplish with Paul Ryan as Speaker of the House. Tim Kaine, the new vice presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. It's really amazing. It's just amazing, is it not? Okay, that's all that's happening. Not much. We'll talk again tomorrow, and we'll open the phone lines and have a great conversation. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.